Blog Talk Radio.
Secure Your Life. I am your host, Diamond Taylor, and tonight it is all about your kids, your money, your plans. This segment is all about kids and money. We are taking financial education to the next level to create financially smart kids. And tonight we have a little bit of a controversial topic. And I want you to think about this. And I want you to call in. I'm getting ready to open up the chat room. And you can also catch us on Twitter at Secure Your Life or Facebook at Secure Your Life. Now, tonight's topic, like I said, is a little bit controversial. And the question is the inner city youth, black inner city youth, are they causing an economic drain to the black community? So the question is the plight of inner city youth and their drain economically on the black community. So that is the subject that we're talking about tonight. If you would like to join me live, you can do so by calling 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. Or you can join me in the chat room. I will take your questions and or comments there, as well as Twitter. That's Twitter at Secure Your Life, as well as Facebook at Secure Your Life. And always remember that we want to hear your views and opinions. But before we do anything, we are going to play our disclaimer, and right after that, jump into our subject for this evening. And again, the question is the plight of black inner city youth and the economic drain to the black community. Are the inner city youth causing an economic drain to the black community? We'll be right back with more of our questions and answers right after our disclaimer.
it is time to do a little housekeeping and give you our disclaimer for Secure Your Life. The views and opinions expressed on the show may not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the host, the sponsors, this station, and that of Puricon Productions. The content and or information that is referenced and referred to on this program are intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. We encourage our listeners to seek direct consultation from a qualified, licensed, and certified professional. The purpose of this show is to provide an open forum where one is free to express his or her opinion. In a no-holds-barred discussion about money, personal finances, and business matters. Now, it is time for you to sit back and participate and enjoy the show. And once again, thank you for joining us for Secure Your Life.
Okay, we are back, and if you just joined us, you are listening to Secure Your Life, and I am your host, Diamond Taylor, and tonight, it is all about your kids, your money, and your plan, and our question, a little bit controversial this evening, the question is, are the inner city youth, black inner city youth, and their plight, are they causing an economic drain to the black community? That is the question for tonight. I want to hear from you, and I want your honest, no-holds-bar opinion about this. And the phone number to contact us is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. You can also join me in the chat room. If you can't get to a phone, you can definitely join me in the chat room or Twitter or Facebook. So that's Twitter at Secure Your Life, Facebook at Secure Your Life, or you can join me in the show's chat room, and I will take your questions and or comments right there on the air and read them live. I'm going to start out with area code 815-395 this evening. And before I click you on the line, I am going to repeat the question for those of you all who did not hear it. The question is the plight of inner city black youth and the economic drain to the black community. In your opinion, do you think that black inner city youth is causing an economic drain to the black community? Hello, 815, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening, Diamond. Hey, this is Ron, and how are you
good
this evening?
I am doing great. Did you hear our question?
Oh, yes. And it is a fact. The inner city youth have created an economic drain on the black community. And
can you elaborate on that?
Okay. As a result of all the single parenting, hey, the children are running wild. There are no controls in place. They're going where they want to go when they get ready to go there. And they have no concept of a tomorrow. I would be willing to bet if you were to set the average one of them down and just say to them, okay, now I do realize you may not know exactly what you want to do or be in your life. I mean, you may not say, well, hey, I don't know if I want to be a fireman. I don't know if I want to be a policeman or work my way up into some cooperation or something or be a flight engineer or something, whatever, you know. Join the military. I really don't. You may not have an answer to that. But the question should be, hey, do you want to make money? Hey, let's face the fact of it. Hey, we're in America. The name of the game in America is money, making money. How can I make money? And what am I going to do with that money after I make it? And the American dream is to say, hey, make your money however you're doing it. I hope you're doing it honestly. That's the name of the game, is to make your money, get up in age, and before you're too old, retire. And take your money and spend the rest of your days in Party Town.
Right.
That's it. That's it.
So,
and a lot of these kids, they got that old, well, hey, the drug dealers, they making big money. You never hear about any retired drug dealer, a gangbanger.
That is true. But if you, now, for those of you all who just joined us, we are talking about a serious topic, and our controversial topic for this evening is, in your opinion, do you believe that the black inner city youth, are they causing an economic drain to the community? And if you believe that, why? And if you don't believe that, we want to know, why do you feel that way also? So you can also call in. And we want to know, no holds bar, real opinions here. Phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. Now, the question once again is, do you believe that inner city youth, black inner city youth, are they causing economic drain to the black community? And if so, why? When did it start, and how can we fix it? So I'm going to add someone else to our phone conversation. And 815, hold on 1 second while we add some more people to the conversation. Hello, 312, how are you?
Good evening, Diamond. How are you this evening?
I am doing fabulous this evening. Did you hear our question?
Most definitely.
And what is your opinion?
The fact of the matter is that it started, and I agree with the other caller, it started when we had to have single parents in the home. It actually started, I'm going further back, it actually started with the Depression, when the social system, in order for you to get welfare, the father had to leave the house in order for her to get some money to take care of the kids or to assist him in taking care of his family. As for the deterioration, the teenagers now, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know what the latest statistics are, they had spent $2.5 billion in entertainment industry, everything from social media all the way through. So does it sound like they're broke to you?
No.
But the thing of it is that we have not taught them where to put their money, what they should do with their money, and again, how to spend their money and save it efficiently. Because we really haven't done it. So are they a flight? Yes, they're spending, when they go get their nails done, they're at the Koreans. When they go get their hair done, they might go to a black hair salon. When the gentlemen go get their hair cut, they might go to a black barber. Not necessarily true. But they go to everything outside of the neighborhood, and they don't circulate the money within the neighborhood for which they live. They go outside. When they go to the theater, they go outside the neighborhood. So how can you keep something growing when every dime and dollar is getting taken out of the neighborhood itself? What's there? It's a desert. It's an urban desert, and we have so many of them.
Okay. So here again, let's see. Our question tonight is the plight of inner city black youth, and do you believe that they are causing an economic drain to the community?
That would be the most hard-filled yes.
Okay, I'm going to read something, an article that I found, and it's called Black Boy in Crisis. And their website is blackboyincrisis.com. Something that I found that was very interesting, it was talking about a book that was written by Richard Clay. And the book is called Raised Wrong, Educated Worse. And I think that that is the biggest problem that is happening with the inner city youth. They are being raised wrong and educated worse. And that is a big problem because of the fact, like you said, the breakdown of the family structure is one of the biggest problems. But then you also have the educational system that is definitely failing our inner city youth. They are failing to help these children rise to the occasion because it's not that they cannot be taught. It's the fact that they're not being taught properly. They're not required to achieve beyond the bar. They've been given low expectations, much given, much expected. If you give them nothing, then they expect nothing. If you do not educate them properly and give them goals, then they will not strive for those goals. So therefore, if you don't put anything in, you won't get anything out. So they are definitely educated wrong. No, I'm sorry, they're educated worse. The inner city youth, especially the inner city black youth and Hispanic youth in this country today, are no farther ahead than they were a long time ago. When every other nationality has progressed, we are either at the same or even worse than we used to be. One, because we are not being raised correctly. And our boys, our male children, are actually have a worse plight than the girls because of the negative influence, the non-supportive situation at home. You know, when you are told that your female siblings are better than you, if your mother expects more out of her daughters and don't expect anything out of her sons, then that's a problem. So the problem is the fact that we are not putting in what is needed in our black males today. So there is a big crisis. So if you just joined us, I want to add some more people to the conversation. If you just joined us, the question is the plight of black inner city youth, and do you believe that they are a drain to the economic situation in the community? So I'm going to add to the conversation. If you just joined us, you can join us in the chat room as well as join me live. The phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. We want to hear from you. What are your opinions on the plight of inner city black youth? And is there a crisis? And are they an economic drain to the community? Okay, area code 704. You are on the air. How are you this evening?
Good, Diamond. This is Thomas.
Hey, Thomas. Did you hear our question?
Yeah, I don't know if I would frame it that way. I believe that when you start talking about, you know, saying that children are drained economically, well, number one, they didn't ask to be here. Number two, we don't really have much of anything to begin with. I mean, the largest black bank in the United States is teetering on collapse, and there's a penny stock that's traded on the New York Stock Exchange that's actually got $25 million in grants. The only reason it's still open. So, you know, the economic situation was pretty piss poor before they even came in the picture. So the reason we have high unemployment because we don't own the factors of production. We don't have access to capital markets. So if they were here or not, we still would be pretty much, on the lowest on the total pole. So I don't know if we can, you know, use them as a scapegoat. I mean, this is what it is. The numbers don't lie. I mean, so at the end of the day, I mean, you know, you can look at it a different way. Crisis, where this crisis is opportunity. If people would look at, I mean, the reasons, okay, for instance, in the city right now, you know, there are certain schools that basically adopted uniforms. Now, what's the craziest part about it is there's still people who want to promote this classism foolishness to say, my child needs to be the individual. No, your child needs to learn. Your child needs to be able to effectively communicate. Your child needs to be able to speak at least two languages. That's what your child needs. Your child doesn't need to wear $200 pair of sneakers that cost $5 for someone to make.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. So we can't blame it on them.
Well, then let me ask you this. Since we were talking about the educational system, do you believe that the educational system is educating our youth wrong? Or should I say worse?
It's an indoctrination system. If you read anything by, you know, Kwanzaa Kanjufu, he basically talked, he had a book called Stopping the, because I read it so long ago, it was back in the 90s when I first read the book, but it's basically the Stopping the Conspiracy, Destroy Young Black Boys. He talks about the fourth grade failure syndrome, you know, they really start institutionalizing black males at a young age, and they start using standardized testing to determine how many prisons they're going to build. So they use what's called tracking. The tracking can be positive, tracking can be negative. The private schools that are, you know, I'm pretty sure Chicago has expensive private schools, just like New York, like we pay $25,000, $30,000 a year for these schools, and they can tell you everything that you need to know about your child's developmental process. Like the schools use the Montessori method. If you're familiar with Madame Montessori, there's a lot of schools that follow that method that basically lets children, you know, discover things, and it gives them a framework, but gives them opportunity to really discover it. They can figure out what their talents and abilities are, and then they nurture it.
That's right.
You know, because knowledge, you know, having knowledge really doesn't mean a whole lot. There's a lot of people who know a whole lot about a whole lot of different things, but it's really about specific application.
That is true. And I think that is what is wrong with the educational system as a whole versus private education, where your child actually does have a better opportunity and their skills are tuned in or honed in, and they're encouraged to learn, and they're encouraged to think outside the box, versus a public school system that does not nurture that.
Well, you can't. I mean, you can't nurture that when you got 40 kids in a classroom.
That's right.
You know, it's just not. It's not possible. That's not. This is not how humans are developed. I mean, if you look at what the lady, her name is Marva. Was it Marva Collins up there in Chicago?
Marva
started
Collins.
Charter school. Yeah,
yes.
I mean, you saw what she did. I mean, she took very little money, but she had, you know, smaller class size, and she was able to encourage achievement, you know. She used Socratic teaching method, and, you know, she was able to, you know, get the most out of those students. You know, she used it, you know, not only did she use everything from, you know, repetition, you know, using visual, audible, speech. She used every facet of learning to make sure that the children grasped all the concepts. And, you know, right now in schools, I mean, there's a lot of children. You know, for instance, there are a lot of people, for instance, who are audible learners. So just because they're not able to learn one style doesn't mean that they're not able to learn. It's just that, you know, you have to figure out what style of learning. Like, I'm a person that because it's been proven that you retain, I believe the numbers are greater than 70% what you see, hear, and do.
Right.
Versus just one of the three.
No, that's true.
Or two of the three. So I think that's the other part of it. I mean, it's even been proven that homeschooling is even more effective in a lot of cases if you have, right, for me, there was a young man that they had on the news that they said he was so-called, you know, lazy and all these different things in school. His mother brought him home, homeschooled him, and the boy went to college at age 14.
Exactly, because see, here's the thing. What happens when a child is in a smaller classroom or homeschooled, you're getting to learn at your own pace, and it's not based on someone else's merit. You're not given, you're not graded on the bail system where you're pitched against someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an opportunity to learn in your correct learning style. So if you're an auditory learner, then your stimuli comes from that. And when you're ready to move on and progress, you don't have to worry about progressing with 35 or 40 other students, where some of the students are advanced, and then you have the middle ones, and then you have the ones that are at the lower end of the bell curve. So one teacher can't get that individualized attention to 40 students. So that's why those students who are either homeschooled or schooled in a smaller classroom environment, they do better. And they don't have to wait for the collective to grasp something to move on to the next level, or if they're not able to grasp it quickly, they're not pitched against the ones who can, you know, interpret the information and grasp it faster than the ones who didn't. So homeschooling, I believe, is one of the best, if you have a parent that is dedicated to doing it, I think that's the best thing that you can do for your child if the opportunity arises for parents to do that. And if not, finding a way where your children can be get their education in a smaller school size.
And some people, and see, that's what I'm saying, a lot of people think, you know, one extreme or other, like there's people who get together and collectively, even if they don't like want to necessarily spend the money on private school, they don't feel like they have the ability to homeschool, some people will group together and they'll get a tutor in a specific subject.
That's right.
Because there are people who basically, there's grad students, people
mm-hmm.
who, you know, have master's degrees that are, you know, working their way towards another degree that you can get to come in and speak, you know, teach certain subjects. And so several people I know that they basically get together and they pool their resources. They might get four or five of their children together and they learn that way. So
that's
there's a
right.
lot of different things that you can do. A lot of people don't think outside the box when it comes to education because, you know, we have to understand this is the Miseducation of the Negro was one of the books that I read when I was like 17 years old. And it really changed my life because I understood, like there's certain things I understood intuitively after my experiences going to public school and going to private school.
Right.
And now that, you know, when I looked at it and I read that book and I realized, you know, because one of the biggest conflicts, one of the things that they did there was a lot of trickery that went on when I was growing up. You know, what they would do things like they would pit the blacks and Puerto Ricans against each other. Like I had a teacher, I literally had this one white teacher, right,
mm-hmm.
that she would do stuff and she would say, she's like, you know, Jamina's smarter than you, right? And Jamina was this girl, she was, you know, she was a pretty, you know, Puerto Rican girl, always, you know, she was, you know, she's fairly quiet and everything. She, you know, she did well, and I wasn't competing with her. I mean, I really could care less. But she
right.
did it as a way to try to get in my head. You know, what I mean, tell me, you know. So they would always do stuff like that. They would always compare us to the Puerto Rican kids, or you know, they'd always find reasons. You know, if I disagree, like for instance, if I challenge them on something, you know, they would try to embarrass you. And if you get the question right. They never, so that was the thing. Like even if I got the answer right, they still try to find a way to embarrass you, even if you know you didn't really do anything wrong. You just challenged them. So they didn't like it was like the audacity of a black child challenging what I'm teaching.
That's right, and that's a big problem for them.
And the thing is, and my parents, you know, my parents, they're older. They came from the South originally, and so they took it as you know. You don't go to teach the school to teach the teachers how to teach. You're supposed to learn. I said, well, I asked them a question. I said, well, what if they, well, I don't agree with what they're saying. And it's that old, and I hate to say it, it comes from that old slave mentality. Because they only know what they know. So I never fought enough because I understood it. But, you know, I would get in those situations in high school, like where a teacher would just flat out lie. And she said, so what you trying to say? She's lying. Yep, she's lying, straight up. I say it's our face. You're lying.
Right.
You know, but the tendency is because we're not as engaged and we're not really as cognizant of a lot of trickery that goes on in the so-called educational system. you know, the kids fall victim to it because, you know, they're not, you know, if the parents are not educated, it's kind of hard for them to combat it because they're thinking whatever they teach you is what you should be learning. And that's not the case.
That's,
you know,
not
a lot,
true.
I mean, the way the education, quote-unquote, system is set up right now, it's set up for you to be a subject, not a citizen,
right,
but a subject. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there's certain, quote-unquote, rights that you have as a citizen, but as a subject, that means you're always going to be beholden and subservient to someone else. And that's what basically this education, it doesn't teach you how to think. It teaches you how to regurgitate facts.
And that's
that
it.
Aren't even necessarily true. You know, it's not real. It's not true learning. So I would say that, you know, if we looked at the one thing, I stress this over and over and over again, is that you have to really look at the economic situation. Show me a community that is economically depressed and show me a functional school system and show me a functional community. Please show me one. Show me one that says economically we have high rates of crime, drugs, teenage promiscuity and pregnancy, and tell me where you have a functional community that's thriving where you don't have high rates of public assistance.
You're not going to find it.
That's what I'm saying. So we got to get past all this hope. That's just absolute balderdash and nonsense. You can't hope for these things. The place where we went wrong, and I'm going to play Tuesday morning quarterback because, you know, this Monday Night Football. Where
right.
we went wrong was when they did so-called integration. They basically integrated themselves into our community, sucked all the resources and money out. What should have happened was, before they did any widespread integration, was 20 years of an infrastructure of nothing but black businesses being built, everything from banks, industrial base, engineering, architecture, legal, medical. It should have been a total infrastructure before integration happened. That's where we went wrong. That's where all the rails. The places where you had that, your Rosewoods, your Black Wall Street in Tulsa, you had a Black Wall Street in Durham. You know what happened? They were all destroyed in some
right.
way, shape, or form. That's where it all went off the rails. When you didn't develop for at least 20 years to get at least one to two solid generations of professionals who were mingled in with all the rest of the community, where you had different classes of blacks all living together and learning how to develop a culture and having some type of cohesiveness, that's exactly where it all went wrong at. And I'm telling you, that's where it went wrong. And the numbers,
agree.
The evidence support it. Because you look at any other community, the Koreans, the Chinese, even the Africans and the Haitians that come from other countries, they have a cohesiveness and they have a cultural connection. So therefore, they know how to do business with each other. They respect each other based on that cultural cohesiveness. We didn't
now,
develop
isn't it
that.
Interesting, isn't it interesting that all of these other nationalities of people, now we still have America, which is supposed to be the melting pot, but all of these other nationalities of people in every major city, they still live amongst themselves and have community cohesiveness. They still have their own businesses. And they support each other, exactly what you just said. But African Americans, or I should say blacks in America, we have not done that. And we have not done that since the Black Wall Street. You know, since the breakdown of that.
Well, and once again, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, the whole illusion of inclusion, America, I hate to say it, and I'm just going to sound pessimistic, but it's just reality. The whole concept of America pretty much has failed because I'm going to give you a clear-cut example I'm talking about. The Chinese, anyone from the Asian bloc, is extremely ethnocentric, meaning that they are about their own and their own first.
That's
so
right.
People, when they come to this country, and I talk to them all the time, Indians, Asians, when they make their money here, they're $200,000 or $300,000 a year, they're spending their money in India developing real estate, making 20% a year over there in India. You know,
right.
One of the things we don't understand is demography. And you have to understand, this is how the wealthy think, okay? You got to really, really take this in, okay? The wealthy,
okay.
Number one, read a lot. They are students of history. They study numbers. They study trends. What if I told you that they have a 5,000-year chart on demographics, on everything going back to the Egyptian dynasties? 5,000 years of demography that they've studied. So they already know about us. 5,000 years of demography. The father of modern demography, or one of them, was Sir Thomas Malthus. He was, you know, an economist, philosopher, you know, from, you know, he predated Darwin. And Sir Thomas Malthus, you know, under Malthusian logic, he talks about the whole concept of the useless eater. Okay. So the very wealthy don't look at the world as if, you know, there's not enough resources. No, they think that there's too many people.
Right.
You know, they don't think like, okay, there's not enough resources going around. No, there's plenty of resources going around, but there's just too many people here. So that's why, you know, you hear them talk about the whole concept of, you know, controlling population growth. They
right.
talk about, I mean, David Rockefeller goes on record saying this at the Council on Foreign Relations and all these places. So you have to really understand their logic. They think it's too many people, so that's why you see people dying all over the globe, because they think that it's not enough. It's too many people to consume the resources. So what that tells me is that, A, we need to get back to, one, learning how to farm. So what
right.
they've done is they've told us, you know, they've made the urban youth think that farming is you know, slave work. You know, wealth starts with farming. You can't
just
be civilized and not have agriculture. You know, so I want to, this is a very interesting concept. I want everyone to think about this, right, who happens to be of color on this call. You can't eat, breathe, or clothe yourself without a white person.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. Repeat that again.
You can't eat, drink, or clothe yourself without a white person.
That's true. Sad to say, but very
right.
true.
Wow. And that's sad that we have come. You would think this is 2011, and we have gone so far away from the bare essentials that we need as a people. And like you said, we are completely 100% consumers and producers of very little.
Mm-hmm. Organic's not new to us. We literally, that's what we had to live on. We had to grow our own food. They didn't give us too much of anything. So now all of a sudden it's a big deal. Black farmers have existed for years. Now we're trying to destroy them and almost completed it. So he's right on that.
Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to Secure Your Life. And our phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343, or you can join me in the chat room. I will read your comment and or questions over the air, as well as Twitter at Secure Your Life or Facebook at Secure Your Life. You can also instant message me, and I will definitely read your comment and or question over the air. Actually, I just got instant message, and the question is for Thomas, and they wanted to know, do you believe that there is a crisis in our community?
Yes.
And are black males an endangered species as we
yes.
speak right now?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, between the ages, our black males are under attack. Between the ages, especially the ages of 14 to 34, there's a problem there. 14
Definitely.
To 34. you are completely at risk. And you're actually at risk even before then. But we're talking about a huge age difference between 14 and 34 years of age, where there are a lot of black males that are incarcerated, which means they are not good citizens of society. They have completely lost all of their rights. So if you've committed a crime between the ages of 14 to 34 that is considered a federal offense, you completely lost your ability to function as a citizen. And so, in other words, you are a complete endangered species. And the longer that you are incarcerated, and most of them are repeat offenders, which means it's a revolving door through the correctional system for them, then they are not becoming citizens or great citizens and productive citizens of society, which is a big problem. So if you just joined us, I would like for you all to call in or join me in the chat room. You can also instant message me or tweet me because we need to talk about this. Do you believe that there is a crisis in the black community, and are we having the problems of being economically drained? Are we considered to be a drain on society? It has been told that the wealthy believe that there's too many people. So if that's the case, and we have a large percentage of youth in America that is considered to be incorrigible, a repeat offender, they're not productive productive citizens of society, then that is considered to be an economic drain. So I would like to hear from you. The phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. And those of you all in the chat room, I'll be right over there. Ron, go ahead and complete your statement and or question.
Okay, no, I just wanted to say that, okay, like during the Depression, okay, next to nobody was working. So that was President Roosevelt, but he got that put into effect. I doubt quite seriously if that was his original idea, but it was spirited through the government, and it went into law. And okay, we're gonna help everybody out. So, but what they were doing is that okay, a married couple could get in the welfare system. A married couple, a woman with children could get on, but a single man or a single woman with no children, they were on their own. See, so when we entered into World War II, everybody went back to work. I should say most people went back to work. Then you had those people that had just gotten lazy, and they just stayed where they were. So the government started playing the cities and the states. They started playing funny games with the money. And this is something I have found that's really funny about money. The more money you handle, the more money will stick to you. Money is really weird. It's a magnet. The more money you handle, the more money will stick to you. I experienced this personally on my job as a bus operator. Now, I started working when we were counting our own money. Now, you start the day out with a $5 bank. Every morning you're supposed to have $5 in change in your changer. Okay. At the end of the month, I would have a couple of bucks, almost $3 over in my changer. And now, when your account is wrong, if it's over or if it's under, they'll call you into the office and ask, hey, you aren't doing your math right. They never called me in. I was never called in for being short of money. But for some mysterious reason, I'm ending up every month. I got more money in my changer. Where is this money coming from? And it's, like I said, it's money is magic. And the route that I was working was not a big money route. So I can imagine what was going on in areas where they were picking up really scarce people and exchanging large amounts of money. And I think the same thing happens when the people that handle the money for the welfare system, people who handle the money for the bank, people who handle money, period. They don't have to steal it. They can just stand up there, just handle it. If it's going through you, some of it don't stick to you. It'll be unaccounted for.
That is true. But here's the thing, getting back on topic, how do we change the crisis? Thomas made a good point that we are heavily dependent on others for our welfare.
Okay, we need to find a means of getting the young people, the youth in the inner city, we need to find a means of getting them on track. We need to talk to these mothers, because there aren't any fathers anymore. We need to talk to these mothers. We need to talk to these teenage girls and tell them to stop being mothers because, hey, you're wasting your time. You're wasting your life. You're producing nothing but babies. There's no money in babies. And I keep saying, the name of the game in America is making money. Like you're saying in that commercial, what's in your wallet?
Right.
Okay, and the only thing you got in your wallet is a link card, you're in trouble. You are in deep trouble. But we need programs put together, and we as a people, and I'm thinking that we go to church. We need these ministers to stop all this holy rolling and start doing some work in the community like they should be doing.
Now, I agree with that.
Start saving some bodies and forget trying to save somebody's soul, because you can't do that anyway. Who do you think you are?
That is true. Thomas, you are still on the air with us, by the way. I like to hear your rebuttal about what Ron had just said. What do you think? We're talking, we need a resolve. What do you think we need to do as a society, as a people, to change our plight?
Well, there's several things. I think one, I hate to say it, but the people who have the means to probably change it, which would be, the black professionals and the black elite, stop using classism. I have a very good friend of mine, and he's unapologetic because he comes from a fairly wealthy family. Parents both, went to Ivy League schools, studied economics, worked for Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, and, went to NYU, and, he has a different worldview because of the contacts that his friends and his family have made. And, he's openly said things like, one, he's very negative about black people because he's actually mixed. He's like black and Asian and Hispanic and a couple other things. But anyway, he has a very general negative view. The only reason me and him are friends is because he respects me, because he knows I didn't have the same, luxury that he had growing up, but we're still in the same place, working in the same company. But, I think, one, that whole air of I'm going to separate myself in every way, shape, or form from others so that way I can prosper. And it's all about just, what me and my family can do. I think that's the most dangerous thing, because what happens is, we gravitate towards those who have all the means. And so basically, we want to assimilate to the point where we want to no longer be of color. I think that's really the catch-all, because there's because I see it all the time. Where first, I give you the good example I'm talking about. Now, you know, I work in the mortgage business. I work for a large bank, and there was someone I made an introduction through an attorney. Right, there's this attorney in Atlanta that introduced me to this gentleman who, you know, he used to work for Goldman Sachs, and he, I don't know how this guy got down Goldman Sachs. He didn't go to Ivy League school. He went to grad school somewhere else. I can't remember where he went to grad school at, but he was relatively young. He was like either 39, getting ready to turn 40. I met him last year.
Okay.
Now, you know, we talked and we were trying to get a loan done, but I couldn't do the loan because of what he needed to get done. He needed something without income documentation. We didn't offer that. But we, you know, I think for whatever reason, he took a liking to me, and, you know, he made it seem like, hey, you know, contact me, you know, if you have questions about something, you know, because I was very interested, like, how did he become now, you know, Goldman Sachs? Now, I reached out to him because I'm very cognizant of, I don't like to waste people's time, and I value other people's time. So I actually did reach out to him, but it was several months later, right? So
okay.
I asked him a question on something. Now, I basically told him I had an idea of how I wanted to do something. It was basically on how to structure a company a certain way. And what he actually specialized was mergers and acquisitions. Now, you know, he told me on the one hand, hey, you know, contact me, you know, if you have a question about something. But really, he didn't want me. He just said that, you know, to be cordial. He really had no intention of helping. Even though I wasn't asking for any money, I was just asking for information. Right.
Ah, but the information is money.
No, this is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I didn't ask him to actually do something for me, like in terms of, like, prepare a prospectus, and I just asked him kind of like a general question.
Okay.
And so it was one of those situations where, okay, he could have made a decision to where it's like, okay, well, okay, I'll just lead him on the right path, and because I wouldn't expect him to take, you know, time out of his day to really develop a plan, because I basically was asking him just about overall structure, because he specialized once again in mergers and acquisitions. So I just asked him a general question on how to, what's the best way to structure the company, you know, based on what my objective is. I said, and I gave him the parameters of what I'm trying to do. And said, okay, which way would probably be the better way? Because neither one of them was wrong, it's just which one is better. You know,
okay.
And so he could have made that decision, say, you know what, okay, because you came to me with the amount of research that you've done, I think that, you know, the conclusion is this based on what you're trying to do. You know? And that's what I'm saying. And unless we're willing to make, because I wouldn't expect someone to come to me, for instance, and tell me they're ready to buy a house, right? But,
right.
You know, their credit is trash, they have no money, and they haven't done anything worthwhile to try to investigate. Because people tell me that they just don't know and just can't find information is nonsense. Like, if you can go on to Google and go to Media Takeout, you can go to Google and find out about, you know, credit. You can put something in Google about credit. Get a little bit educated. Show me that you at least made an effort.
Right.
If you can't show me that, then I really don't want to deal with you. Because I have a cousin like that. Like, every year she'll come to me and say, Tommy, what do I need to do to get a house? Now, you've been asking me that question for 5 years. I told you what to do the first time. You still didn't make any positive steps in that direction. That's what you're wasting my time.
Right. Well, I think that that's the problem. I think that too often we use that as an excuse for not doing. And then I think for the young man who you know, although he's being cordial, you know, cordial with you and said, you know, if you have a question, you can call me. I think the problem is the fact that, here again, he did not have all of the credentials, if you will, of someone that you would think would be working at Goldman Sachs and maybe saw you as a threat.
I want to get this twisted. I want to put this on the record. This dude was not, trust me, I'm going to tell you who he had on the board of his company. He had one of the Rothschilds on the board of his company. Trust me, that wasn't the issue. He had Douglas Rothschild. I said, is that D? He's like, yep. He said, how much, he said, Thomas, you couldn't even imagine how much money these people have. So he has, he used to work for KPMG. He worked for Kuhn & Loeb. So that wasn't the issue at all. This dude's multi-millionaire, 10 times over. Now, it's just a matter of, once again, selfishness.
Right.
That's my
so he
point.
Didn't wanna, he didn't want you to gain information, like, or opportunities, that is, that he has been afforded. He didn't want to share that with you or anyone else, for that matter.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. Now, we have someone who is willing to do that. I was talking about the gentleman, Kenneth Reeves. I actually signed up for his website on askthewiz.info. This is a brother that you really need. This guy's too busy to really even, because I was like, you know, get him on Blog Talk. Because if you look at what he's doing, it's really so, I mean, it's really touching. For $50 a month, let me tell you what this dude is doing. He's giving you a one-on-one. He will talk to you one-on-one, set up a consultation. You tell him what your goals and objectives are. He does webinars. He gives you access in person to two seminars in person with him in Atlanta. He gives you access to his on-demand archive of videos and webinars. He will review your 401k IRAs, or if you have an investment club, every quarter to help you rebalance for whatever your goal objective is, to make sure you're not taking, you know, losses or too much risk.
Wow.
Unheard
of.
And the guy, and he has a PhD in economics.
Okay, so what's the website again?
It's askthewiz.info. You can look him up. Kenneth Reeves.
Gotcha.
And trust me, I did my due diligence on him. I look up, you know, Kenneth Reeves scam, because that's the first thing I do. I look at people, I put the name scam. just to make sure, like, you know, nothing crazy comes back. You're not going to find anything crazy. And this guy who actually has education, and he has a global understanding of the market. See, I don't want to get into like a rebuttal with anyone, because that's not what it's about. Because, you know, I used to, when I was younger, I thought the world doesn't really revolve around money. Because the money that we think is real is not real.
Right.
It revolves around resources. That's what the world really revolves around. And the history of the world kind of proves that. Because if you look at, for instance, the Nile Delta, okay, most of the Nile actually runs through Ethiopia. Okay?
Right.
But, you know, Egypt controls it. And so, you know, the person who has control of resources really is the one who rules. So, you know, you look at what happened when they tried to take over the water in Bolivia. You know, they tried to privatize water in Bolivia. I mean, that's what the end game of everything is right now. Corporations want to privatize everything. Everything from, that's why they make up all these things about Hugo Chavez, for instance, being this, you know, brutal dictator and this bully and fascist and everything, because he took the resources and made it the people's resources. You know, he took that wealth, that oil, and made it something that the people can rely on. But they try to say, oh, it's evil because it's being controlled by the state. Well, it's helping to better the lives of the people. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Nigeria nationalized the oil. And see what happened in Nigeria. Nigeria is on track to be one of the overwhelming powers in the world, with 160 million strong, with 4% of their nation's income, their GDP, in debt, versus the United States, which has 97% of its income is debt. Did you hear
that?
Wow. 97% of our GDP is debt.
That's horrible.
And how are they going to solve the problem? Pumping more funny money into the system. But yet, we're the great superpower. There were 52 other stock markets that did better than the United States last year.
52?
We were the 52 around the world.
Wow.
We were the 52nd best stock market.
That is sad. That is completely sad. So, in what we need to do as a resolve, what would you suggest our resolve should be?
We have to stop focusing on just this country. We have to look globally.
Global, yeah.
We have to think globally because this is, everything is based on a global order. We have to understand what that global order is, and we have to learn how to understand macro trends. We look at micro trends. We have to look at macro. Macro trends is what moves everything, okay? So, for instance, you know, countries like India and China, think about something, right? India and China alone, we're talking about two countries, right, in Asia, make up almost 40% of the world's population.
Wow.
That is something. Now, and also very important fact. Now, may also couple that with the fact that India is a nation that their what's called population pyramid is one that is going to have explosive growth. And guess why? Because even though they have a lot of poverty, they have a lot of young people that are succeeding older generations that is able to help their economy flourish. Because you have if you're really talking about drain on resources, and if you're older than, if you're a baby boomer and you get offended, I'm sorry, but this is just facts. An older society is a drain on resources. Because in our country, it's the opposite. You have 85 million baby boomers and you got 65 million Gen Xers, so you don't have enough people to buy and pass down resources to.
That's true.
So, for instance, you don't have enough Gen Xers to buy the houses that the baby boomers have left behind. And you have negative wage growth for the past decade, so therefore you don't have an emergence of a middle class. And the baby boomers are still in the job market taking jobs from the younger generation. I got people 65 years old complaining that they can't find a job. And guess why? Because their assets were depleted, because they've been robbed blind by, you know, by Wall Street. And so now they have to go back out to the workforce. So where does that leave the younger generation? Whereas if you go to a country like India, it's the exact opposite. You have a very small group of older people relative to a burgeoning middle class and very educated, you know, middle class, the upwardly mobile society.
Right. Well, you know what? So, this is a wealth of information, and we do need to continue this conversation on our next show probably, because this is something that is important, and we do need to find some type of resolve and actually execute, get the word out so that we can do something to save our generation next. I mean, you know, it's important that we do that. The, you know, the millennium children are basically endangered, seriously endangered, because, one, they are educated wrong, and, two, we are not providing for them any means to be solvent. I mean, they're actually coming into nothing but debt. They are too dependent on everyone else for their resources. Everything else is there, nothing but, I mean, we as a people are just 100% consumers with very little production that we, you know, we don't own anything.
Did you hear what I said earlier today? Did you hear what I said earlier?
Yes, but repeat
about
it.
The largest black bank in the United States, okay, Carver Savings Bank out of New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is on the brink of collapse, and they had to get a $25 million grant. They are a penny stock traded on the pink sheets, only 47 cents a share.
Wow.
Gravy.
Wow.
And their assets are less than $500 million.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, yeah, there's something that definitely needs to be done. But we're going to have to talk about that on another show and spread the word. You have been listening to Secure Your Life. And we always have an open forum every weeknight at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. And join us tomorrow for another great show. And I'm welcoming all of you all to spread the word and tell everyone about this so that we can have not only something that is informative and educational, but something that we can start a resolve on. So until tomorrow, and remember, we are on 5 days a week, so that's weeknight, 10 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. And tell a friend and spread the word. And until tomorrow, I'd like to bid you all good night. But I also have some really great news as far as employment is concerned. Secure Your Life is hiring in our sales department. So please send us your resume. And if you are a business owner and you have positions that are open, please shoot us an email so that we can let the rest of our listeners know about it. And that would be SYL. Show, S-H-O-W, at att.net. Again, that is S-Y-L, the word show, S-H-O-W, at att.net. So until next time, I'm going to bid you all a good night. And good night, everyone, and we will see you tomorrow, same channel, same time. Until then, good night.
Good night, Diamond.
Good night.
I'm thinking back to all in day.